ATL Echo presents Burn Like Fire by Dodger Cadavra. Harry comes out of the forest, dead inside. He's not sure when he dies. Before the battle, maybe. And he doesn't come alive again when Voldemort avadas him in the forest. Harry's too scared and too busy hoping it'll happen fast, now, quickly, before his body can do something unpredictable like fall or cry. He doesn't feel alive again at King's Cross afterwards, with Dumbledore giving him loads of secrets that would have been helpful, like, at any point before Harry died. He doesn't even feel alive once Narcissa Malfoy calls, "He is dead!" to the Death Eaters, and Voldemort screeches a crucio at Harry, and his life, depends on staying floppy and pretending he doesn't exist. Not at the Burrow. Not at Grimmauld Place. Not at any of the trials. Not on the Hogwarts Express on 1st September, a trip Harry spends in a deep and dreamless sleep until Hermione shakes him gently awake.
"Harry, you've got to wake up. We've got to hurry and put our robes on. We'll be at Hogsmeade Station in a few minutes."
"Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, of course. He's got to put his robes on to go to school. That's normal. That's a normal thing for people to do." Forget normal. Nothing about arriving at Hogwarts for 8th year even seems real. The carriages trundle up to the castle behind the teams of Thestrals. Literally everyone can see them now, Harry's pretty sure. Thousands of candles float above the house tables, like Tom Riddle didn't die, just there. Headmistress McGonagall brings the first years into the Great Hall for the sorting with an air of aggressive optimism. Harry leans over to Ron.
"They look like babies."
"They are babies." Ron's already writing on parchment. He's decided to become a healer. Harry doesn't know why he came back to Hogwarts instead of signing up for the course at St. Mungo's. He claps automatically after the first sorting, and doesn't realize he's scanning the Slytherin table until a Hufflepuff he doesn't recognize leans her head into his line of sight.
"Ugh," Harry leans into Hermione. "Why don't they just
stay out of your way so you can look for Malfoy?"
Hermione says, still clapping politely for someone who sorted into Slytherin.
"No? Don't know why you'd say that."
Hermione tips her head against his.
"Do you want to switch seats?"
"Yeah, mate. Need a boost?"
Ron asks from his other side.
"No."
"There, Harry. He's just got here."
Harry looks where Hermione's pointing. There he is. And immediately looks away. Griggs, Linus, sorts Ravenclaw. Harry claps too enthusiastically, his eyes locked on the sorting hat. He doesn't even feel alive then, either. Or during the walk to the new 8th-year tower the castle has sprouted. Or when Headmistress McGonagall unrolls a parchment with a flick of her wrist and assigns them to rooms in pairs. Harry doesn't bother complaining when he's assigned to a room with Malfoy. He just goes in and tosses his outer robes on one of the beds. He's casting about, looking for something to do, the castle already hung up his uniforms, and Harry's not going through his trunk tonight. When Malfoy steps into the doorway, Harry glances at him and bollocks. His heart doesn't race. It beats normally, in a very bloody normal way, and not because he's sick with relief or anything. His lightheadedness is probably just from sleeping too long on the train. Malfoy leans against the threshold, his arms crossed over his chest, looking so alive it hurts. His black robes are open to reveal dark gray trousers and a waistcoat with a Slytherin patch sewn over Malfoy's heart. His whole body is sharp and long, nothing like he was at his trial.
"You're out of uniform," Harry hears himself say.
Malfoy's eyes glint, the corner of his mouth curving up in a teasing, mocking smirk.
"Would that it were true, Potter."
"What?" Harry understands too late.
"As always."
"No, that's not what I meant. If you're going to..."
"Oh, Potter. Don't strain yourself. I won't be underfoot, I promise."
"Where are you going?" Harry demands, but Malfoy's already striding away. He rushes to the threshold of their room, feeling absolutely mental, and that's when he feels it. A flame in his chest, like a lit candle, hot and dancing.
Malfoy!
No answer. Malfoy only left the silvery scent of his magic behind. And Harry. So Malfoy doesn't want to sleep in the same room as Harry. That's fine. Harry doesn't care about Malfoy. He definitely doesn't care if Malfoy doesn't come back for the rest of the evening, and he's not there when Harry wakes up the next morning. Malfoy's bed doesn't look slept in. His trunk is there at the foot, but no Malfoy. Whatever. Harry showers and dresses in his school uniform, which feels like getting ready for a costume party. He catches a glimpse of himself in the mirror and startles. Who is that? But it's only Harry. He needs a haircut, and he forgot to do a shaving charm for, like, a few months, so he looks like he just wandered out of the Forest of Dean. Harry fixes that. There's no hope for his hair. And goes down to breakfast with Hermione and Ron. He can hardly feel the flame in his chest anymore. It must have been some sort of hallucination. Or maybe he's ill. Harry feels a bit ill when they sit down at the Gryffindor table. His heart's going too fast, and his stomach is uneasy. And maybe he shouldn't be here at all. Maybe he should... A glint of white blonde hair flashes in the corner of his eye. Harry looks before he can stop himself. And there's Malfoy at the Slytherin table, looking perfectly rested. Looking perfect. Where has Malfoy been all night? Did he find some secret hideaway in the castle just for the purposes of avoiding Harry? Did he go back to the Room of Requirement just so he wouldn't have to spend one night in the same room? What the fuck? Harry says to his empty plate. Everything okay? Hermione murmurs into his ear. Do you need to go upstairs and rest?
No.
No, I'm okay. Hungry. I'm hungry. Harry drops a stack of toast onto his plate and pours himself too much tea. There's no room for milk and sugar, but Harry drinks the whole cup anyway. Ravenous. It doesn't matter where Malfoy sleeps. It doesn't matter what Malfoy does in the classes they have together, which is every bloody class. It doesn't matter that he's done something to his robes, or to the clothes underneath, or both. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What do you think he's up to? Ron says one morning in the third week of September. Who? Harry looks away from the doors of the Great Hall. Malfoy had just come through. Not that Harry cares. On his other side, Hermione is taking two sets of notes at once, one by hand and one with a quill hovering in the air next to her. A beat of silence. Malfoy. Don't know, don't care. Well, Ron's tone goes all reasonable. Harry considers flinging his plate of bacon across the room. I reckon you'd know better than anyone. Why? Harry is going to throw the bacon. He'd turn over the whole table if he could do it without hurting anyone. Is that the sort of thing a person does if they've gone mental? Probably. It's a pretty big table. Maybe what Harry really wants to do is leap over the table and stomp all the way across the Great Hall to the Slytherin side, then climb on top of Malfoy so he can't run away, and then... talk. Talk to him. Because you room together. Oh. Harry unclenches his teeth and faces Ron, who's watching him with an expression of mild concern. Well, not really. He doesn't ever sleep there. He doesn't even come to get things from his trunk. That's weird, isn't it? Dunno, Harry says, ignoring the scorch of heat in his chest. Don't care. The next evening, Malfoy sprawls in a chair in the 8th-year common room, his legs over one arm, crossed, like he's some poncy prince in a painting. Harry doesn't look at him. It's not enough. Because Malfoy just keeps sitting there, getting his silver-sweet magic all over the air, talking to Gregory Goyle and Seamus Finnegan in a voice a bit too low for Harry to hear.
Harry?
Hermione nudges his elbow with hers. They were studying in the common room first. There's no reason Malfoy needs to taunt Harry when he won't step foot in their bloody shared room.
Have you thought about talking to...
I'm tired,
Harry shouts, and slams the cover of his book shut. The common room falls silent around him as he gets to his feet. Oh, bollocks. He looked. And Malfoy was looking back at him, looking satisfied, the git.
I'm going to bed, he announces, and goes upstairs without risking another glance.
Harry's a simmering kettle. He's too bloody hot. All day, all night. Ignoring Malfoy takes up all his energy and leaves him with a dull, throbbing headache that never seems to go away. On the second Sunday of October, Harry's looking for an empty classroom to study in. He can't stand the common room, not when Malfoy might show up and stretch out his long legs everywhere, when a cloak flaps quietly behind him. He whirls around just as the person disappears around the corner. Harry only catches the black cloak, the heel of a shiny shoe, and the hem of a pair of dark gray trousers. That's more than enough.
Malfoy! He shouts after him. I know you're following me! Why are you following me?
Malfoy doesn't answer. Malfoy is 26 minutes late to the Halloween feast. Harry hasn't put any food into his mouth. Ron's been doing it for him, actually, just sort of putting things in front of him, making flying broom noises, and Harry's too busy trying not to boil over to tell him to sod off. He's chewing a bite of treacle tart, which is pretty good, when Malfoy slips in through the main doors and heads directly to the Slytherin table.
Uh-oh, Ron says. We all know what that expression means.
We certainly do, Hermione agrees.
Harry picks up a biscuit shaped like a pumpkin and shoves the whole thing into his mouth at once. He's not going to say anything. Even if Ron and Hermione are right. Even if that's Malfoy's up-to-something face. After that, all Malfoy does is skulk around the castle. He's constantly breezing by when Harry knows he has a class on another floor, or leaving early from dinner, or cutting a handsome, mysterious figure out on the lawn, even when the weather is atrocious. It doesn't matter what he's doing. The war's over, and the last time Harry cornered Malfoy, he ended up bleeding out in a bathroom. Besides, Harry's brain is turning on again, probably so it has something to do with all the extra energy that pounds away in him day and night. He understands things in class. He doesn't struggle nearly as much to get his essays done. He's hungry more than once a day. Except Malfoy still hasn't slept in the room they're supposed to share. Not that Harry cares. At all. He doesn't. Harry lasts until the 6th of November. Seamus has been talking non-stop about Hogsmeade for 45 minutes in the common room when Harry finally breaks. He climbs the stairs to his room, feeling like he's holding his breath, then forces himself to breathe while he digs to the bottom of his trunk and takes out the Marauder's map. His eyes go to Malfoy's dot like they were charmed. He's easy to spot anyway, because his dot is on the road through the Forbidden Forest, right on the edge of the map. And then, his dot is gone.
Harry!
Seamus shouts.
Wait for me!
Harry doesn't say anything. He has no idea what Seamus is talking about, but he's finally got a plan. He's finally got something to do. He's finally broken free of whatever it was that's been holding him back, and Harry's not stopping for anything. He doesn't stop for a cloak. He doesn't even stop for a Lumos. Seamus keeps chatting to him, but Harry doesn't hear a word. He feels like he's flying across the grounds, not walking. The cold doesn't touch him. Nothing touches him. And then he's charging down the high street in Hogsmeade until he stops, breathing hard. What? Harry says, his voice echoing off the sleepy buildings. It's here. Seamus puts a hand on Harry's elbow and turns him around. They're at Madame Puttyfoot's tea shop.
Seamus, what the bloody hell is this?
It's the tea shop,
Seamus answers.
Come on.
He rushes up to the door and taps the knocker with his wand. and the knocker grows, spiraling out over the panels of the door and expanding until it's a different door.
"Hurry up," Seamus shouts. "Haven't got all night."
Harry inhales to say he's not going into some cursed tea shop with a cursed door. On the air is the faint scent of silver. The club underneath Madam Puddyfoot's is called Chamomile After Dark, and it is full of people who clearly have no intention of going to bed early. Harry instantly loses Seamus in the crowd. He can't hear anything over the thrumming bass, and can't see anything but writhing, dancing bodies, and can't think except for, "Find Malfoy, find Malfoy, find Malfoy." 3 steps inside, and Harry spots him. He's leaned up against a wall with no waistcoat on, and his white shirt is open at the throat, and he's leaning over to talk to... Ron. Something snaps in Harry's head. It's not betrayal, he feels. It's that hot, dancing flame. It's jealousy.
"No!"
he bellows. No one seems to hear him. He doesn't know how they could, with music this loud. The crowd is too tightly packed to make his way through by force, so Harry has to dance through the swaying limbs, bumping into people as hard as he can just to gain an inch of bloody space. He passes Madam Puddyfoot, who's grinding up against Madam Rosemurda with a blissed out look on her face. He passes Hermione, who's dancing with Blaise Zabini and who doesn't even notice Harry. He passes Seamus, who's dancing so close to Dean Thomas that there's no room for Merlin. Harry doesn't care about any of it. It takes a lifetime to claw himself out of the crowd and get to Malfoy and Ron. By the time he does, Harry's got no self-control whatsoever. He shoves himself bodily between them.
"He's supposed to be my roommate!"
he scream shouts at Ron, who puts 2 fingers on Harry's shoulder and turns him around to face Malfoy.
"You're supposed to be my roommate!"
he scream shouts at Malfoy. He expects Malfoy to sneer, or smirk, or sneer and smirk. But instead, Malfoy slips a cool hand around the side of Harry's neck and kisses him. Harry loses his mind. He at least loses any spatial awareness because the club disappears. It's like, still there, but Harry doesn't care about it or about anyone watching him.
"What the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck?"
he demands into the kiss, which is the best kiss of his life. It's hungry and sharp and unhinged, and somehow Malfoy's got him pressed up against the wall of this club. And that makes Harry want to push him, so he does, only to find himself pushed back harder against the wall, and then... It doesn't devolve, as far as Harry's concerned. They're not fighting. It's just that there are parts of Malfoy that Harry has wanted to get his fists on for, like, 7 years, and he can't wait anymore. The next thing he knows, Malfoy's biting him. The next thing he knows after that, Malfoy's got one leg between Harry's thighs. The next thing he knows after that, they're in some other room. The music still rattles the walls, but there isn't anyone else. Harry's pretty sure there's nobody else. He doesn't really care if there is. All he cares about is that he's got Malfoy's shirt in both fists, and Malfoy's face dragged close to his.
"Why are you avoiding me?"
"I wasn't avoiding you," Malfoy hisses, like he's annoyed that Harry's making them stop snogging to do something mental like talk.
"I was provoking you, and it took you a bloody long time to notice, Potter. An outrageously long time."
"Why were you provoking me? What could you possibly want?"
"I was provoking you because I couldn't stand you like that."
"Like what?" Malfoy gives him a dead-eyed look. Harry jerks back so hard his head hits the wall. It almost hits the wall. It would hit the wall if Malfoy's hand weren't there to stop him.
"I didn't look like that," Harry argues.
Malfoy narrows his eyes.
"You don't look like that now.
You're welcome.
Do you fancy Ron?" "Potter, are you mad?"
"Yes," Harry shouts, screams at Malfoy.
"Yes, I've gone mad. There was a whole war, in case you forgot, and then you were skulking in the castle. And it took you this long to do something about it. You've lost your heroism, Potter."
"Shut up. No, I haven't. I was trying to be normal." Malfoy rolls his eyes so theatrically that his head tips back. Harry takes the opportunity to nip his throat.
Fuck, Malfoy says, low and urgent. Would that you were,
Harry shoots back, fucking me, instead of hiding from me like a big... Whatever Harry was going to say disappears, because Malfoy turns him around, shoves his jeans and pants down to his knees, and casts on him, all in the span of a single heartbeat. And then Malfoy's... He's behind Harry, spreading Harry open, and licking him. The sensation of Malfoy's tongue on Harry's hole wipes out the entire universe. Yes, he means to shout, but it comes out as a sort of begging moan. Yes, 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 fuck, yes, I... Harry's thighs are shaking by the time Malfoy's voice is next to his ear.
Why didn't you just say, Potter? We could have saved ourselves so much trouble.
Please, Harry pants.
Malfoy gentles him with a hand on his lower back.
Don't worry, darling. I will.
There's a lot of lube then, and Malfoy's fingers. And Harry cannot figure out how he's got so much of his body pressed against Harry when he's opening him up on his fingers. He can't figure out how Malfoy's got the presence of mind to keep talking, saying things like,
There. Perfect.
And, Relax, darling. And,
Oh, you've needed this, haven't you?
Harry only has the presence of mind to say, Yeah, yeah. And, And, Please. Malfoy brushes against his prostate. And Harry understands, in a bolt of inspiration, that he has a prostate, and that he wants Malfoy to do whatever he just did until they're both dead. He floats on that feeling until Malfoy takes his fingers out of Harry.
No,
Harry sobs. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to him. Ever. Malfoy pets comfortingly at his hole.
Listen.
I am, Harry whines.
And you're doing so very well. But we don't have to go any further if you don't want to. I can make you come like this.
Want to, Harry manages.
Tell me what you like, then. I want to be sure, in the event...
Never done it before.
Harry rocks his hips so he can get more contact with Malfoy's fingers. But I want to do it now. Please, please. Malfoy lets out a breath against Harry's neck.
Hold on to the wall, darling. Just like that.
The moment Malfoy presses inside him, all the air goes out of Harry's lungs. It's never going to work. Malfoy's too big. There's just too much of him. But then his hands are on Harry's front and his sides, and his chest is against Harry's, and all of him is so lean and warm and strong that Harry finds the will to take one breath, then another. The burning stretch fading into a sensation like winning the bloody war, except better. And then his body decides to move, and Malfoy lets out a grunt, and that's all Harry needs. He was a seeker. He wants to chase something shiny. There's nothing shinier in the world than the sounds Malfoy makes. Harry doesn't get to hear all of them, because shagging feels better than he ever would have guessed. Nothing has ever involved so much of him before. Nothing has ever taken his heaviest thoughts and darkest memories and flung them somewhere they can't bother him. Nothing. Malfoy wraps his hand around Harry's cock, and that's all. That's all it takes. Not much more than that. Harry hadn't known he was so close, but that doesn't matter either. He couldn't have prepared for this. It rushes through him, out of him. He's distantly aware of Malfoy cursing in his ear and pulsing heat inside him. Harry turns his head and discovers that the door there behind is slightly open. There are people moving out there, though he can't see a bloody thing about them without his glasses. Where are his glasses? He doesn't care. Harry should find them, though. He summons them, and they fly onto his face. Malfoy shivers, and it tips Harry back into his body, or back into his mind. He's been very much in his body for the first time since... Since the war, maybe. He can't remember the last time he felt so alive. Like he's filled to the brim with magic.
Malfoy, he says.
Malfoy's answer is to take Harry's chin in his hand and kiss him while Harry's still against the wall. The angle shouldn't work, but it does. It does. It really does.
The door, Harry gasps finally. The door's open.
Oh, no, Malfoy says. Someone might have seen.
Harry's whole body clenches pleasantly at the idea, and Malfoy curses again, sliding out of Harry.
No, don't.
Harry reaches backwards for Malfoy and keeps him close.
Don't what?
Don't move. I'll take us back.
Potter.
Malfoy's hand tightens on Harry's hip.
You can't just...
They land too close to Harry's bed and fall sideways into it.
Apparate into Hogwarts, Malfoy says, breathless.
Oops, says Harry.
Oh, Merlin, it's so late. You've got to go to sleep. Here.
He sits up, ignoring his jeans and pants around his ankles.
Where have you been sleeping, anyway? Who've you been sleeping with?
If you must know, I've been sleeping next to your best mate, Ronald Weasley.
Malfoy drags Harry down until their lips are an inch apart.
Next to him, Potter. On the floor of his room. All because your friends were so worried.
Are you sleeping here now? Like, are you actually going to sleep here? And stay here?
Malfoy's silver gray eyes go wide.
That's what you care about, not your friends' ridiculous plots.
Are you?
For Merlin's sake, Potter, yes.
God.
Harry lets his head fall to Malfoy's chest.
But...
Malfoy tenses.
But what?
When you're, like, actively shagging me, you should call me Harry.
Fine, but only if you call me Draco.
Fine.
They lie there in silence for a little while. It's nice, after how loud it was in that weird tea shop club. What's even nicer is that Draco strokes Harry's hair, slow and thoughtful.
Draco?
It doesn't feel as strange to say it as Harry thought.
Yes?
I'm alive now.
Good.
Don't leave, though. Don't go anywhere.
I won't.
Draco kisses the top of Harry's head.
I'll stay. I promise.
ETL Echo. Echoing tales for everyone to love.